We are looking at true spirituality, and from the book by that name by Dr. Francis Schaeffer and my meditations on it, we've looked at the freedom from the bondage of sin. Freedom from the results of the bonds of sin is what we're looking at now. We've dealt with the freedom from conscience, a guilty conscience. We've looked at, begun getting into the freedom of our thought life. The first was the concept and importance of thought life. Don't minimize that. And then secondly, substantial healing of psychological problems. We were dealing with the qualification word substantial. And then third, deal with the promise of substantial. We were saying substantial is not then perfect healing. So we don't expect that. But what we do is to deal with the promise of substantial. What the healing that is promised, let's go for that. So looking at that, on the other hand, while it's not going to be perfect, we do not stop short of all that God can and will do in healing your brokenness and my brokenness. God does a substantial work. So reject the world's interpretation of psychology that makes man another animal. Some treat psychological problems not as solving sin's brokenness, but as mere conditioned reflex. And if you recognize that what they call psychological, coming from the Greek word psychos, that's the word translated soul, and most of the time in the King James. And the soul is the mind. That's where they get psychology and psychiatry. But we recognize that there's a spiritual component to it all, and this is what they do not. So here's an insight into what the psychologists think. Let's look at Pavlov's bell. This is something most of us are familiar with, I think. On the website Simply Psychology, we read, Pavlov, 1902, started from the idea that there are some things that a dog does not need to learn. For example, dogs don't learn to salivate when they see food. The saliva starts flowing. It's part of a digestive process. And so they are, you find them licking their mouth as they get ready for the food. This reflex is hardwired into the dog. It just happens. You don't have to encourage it. In behaviorist terms, it is an unconditioned response. In other words, a stimulus-response connection that requires no learning. It just happens. It's the way people, or the way the dogs are built, and people too. I salivate when I get around food. So in behaviorist terms, we write, unconditioned stimulus, food, brings about, leads to unconditioned response, the salivation. All right, Pavlov showed the existence of the unconditioned response by presenting a dog with a bowl of food and the measuring of its salivary secretions. Not a very fun thing, measure how much drool the dog had. However, when Pavlov discovered that any object or event which the dogs learned to associate with food, such as the lab assistant bringing in the bowl of food, would trigger the same response. They began to salivate when the lab assistant brought in the bowl of food, not because they were going to eat the lab assistant, hopefully, but because they saw this was the sign of food coming. So what he did was he devoted the rest of his career to studying this type of learning, conditioned response. In his experiment, Pavlov used a bell as his neutral stimulus. So whenever he gave food to his dogs, he also rang a bell. So a bell and a certain rhythm of electric bell. There is high sound, low sound, you know, all these things. So a certain bell sound meant the food was coming, and he says, after a number of repeats of this procedure, he tried the bell on its own, As you might expect, the bell on its own now caused an increase in salivation. So it's like making a promise, but maybe not keeping it. Just ring the bell, the dinner bell in this case, and dinner didn't come, but the dog began to respond. So the dog had learned an association between the bell and the food, and a new behavior had been learned. Because this response was learned or conditioned, it is called a conditioned response. The neutral stimulus of the bell had become a conditioned stimulus. So this is the way the psychologist thinks of us, that we have to learn a conditioned response to what we would call good and bad. But we need to know that mankind, you and I, are made in the image of God. So you are rational and moral. Therefore, you need to be consistent in life and responsible in behavior. This is consistent in life is rational, and responsible in behavior is moral. So basic psychological problems are founded on two mistakes. One, we try to be what we are not. We're hearing this problem with Angie's mother. The forces that be around her are putting expectations out, and this is urging her to try to be something that she's not. Now, she obviously is willing. They've actually made the trip more than once. We've been following and taking care of that. But secondly, we try to carry what we cannot bear. Now, if you recognize this, the person is falling under a load that they can't bear. The Bible actually deals with this in Galatians. It says, Galatians 6, it has two verses that seem to be nearly contradictory. One is that that each man is to bear his own burden. Bear his own burden. And then he says to bear one another's burden. You say, okay, well, which is it? Well, it's both. And actually, the Greek word to bear are two different words. A man explained it, I thought, pretty well by saying that we bear our own burden. This is the word, the burden is the word for the soldier's backpack. This is, you know, it might be a heavy backpack, but it is the stuff that he needs, the stuff that he's going to be using. And so therefore, it's something that a person can bear. But the, backpack, you think of that. Then it says, bear one another's burdens. This is the burden of something very large. The guy says, this is like boxcar. And you don't strap that on your back and say, well, let's go. You know, I'm ready for the trip uphill. This is when that is on you. It calls for help. And this is what we need to be looking out for, the people that we care for, people that we want to help. When is it a boxcar and we're going to call some people together and help push this thing? So don't try to be what you're not. This means that you have to look to God to understand who you are, you see. Let God describe who you are, and let God describe what you can bear. So, typical situation, you meet Supergirl on the roof of the Sears Tower, now called the Willis Tower in Chicago, and she invites you to fly with her to the next rooftop, and you agree. Why not? The roof is 1,450 feet above the sidewalk. she jumps off, you jump off, she flies, and you fall and are squashed. Why? Because you are not her. These are things you do not have the ability to do. This is rational and moral. You have to live with who you are. I started out my marriage understanding that the man of the house runs things. So I'm gonna do the bookkeeping. I'm gonna do the finances. I'm gonna keep the thing, and I'm just no good at that. So we started not paying bills because I just hadn't paid attention. And so my wife is a secretary, and rejoices in these things. So I finally made the executive decision, appointed her my CFO, my chief financial officer. And so she takes care of all of it. And I am here to help. From time to time, we had budgeting problems, and I'd sit down with her and go over it and try to apply my logic to these things and come out with what's first and foremost and all this kind of stuff. But I left it with her because I'm pretty sure you say it this way, I couldn't discipline myself consistently enough to sit down and do that because it was so boring. And I'm addicted to things that are interesting. So if I sit down to do that and, you know, a fly buzzes, I'm more interested in the fly than doing this stuff with all the numbers and stuff. So you're just not particularly a practical person. My wife, ultimately practical. And so that's not who I am. And I just deal with that. And you can deal with it once you understand it. All right. Again, things that happen probably all the time. You meet Atlas carrying the planet Earth. And he tells you that he needs a cool drink. And you say, yeah, I can imagine. He asks you to hold his burden for a moment. You agree, because you're a helpful person. The Earth weighs approximately 13 plus septillion pounds. As it lands on your shoulders, you're just squashed. The burden is too great for you. So we probably wouldn't take those challenges because even to us, unaccustomed as we are to failure, these things just wouldn't seem rational. When you refuse to acknowledge that you are finite man living in this present evil age, you will be squashed. You should become familiar with being squashed. Failure in your life, a no good Nick, because you're taking on what you can't do. You're accepting responsibility for what you can't do. You know what happens if you're a weak tire and you take too much air pressure in, like you're a big tough tire? It will cause an explosion. Boom. While the pressure causes the break, the weak place in the tire is the spot of breaking. And we recognize that from time to time, as I was mentioning about my practical ability to handle the finances, we have weak spots. And God often pairs us up very wisely with somebody that can handle this, you see. So, you break down. Now, analyzing this, did I bring this on because I'm pretending to be someone I'm not, or because I am taking on more than I can bear? Optimistically, perhaps, but unrealistically. So your breakdown may be psychological. You have too great expectations for your finite mind, your finite will, your finite emotions. There are times when I've heard of people being depressed, and by the way, depression, my definition of depression is being emotionally exhausted. You know, if you say, I'm just going to start running around the church building 60 times. Well, at some point, you're just going to stop because you're exhausted. Well, emotionally, if there's something that is making you continually feel sad or happy, I mean, I've seen a mother fall into depression for a week after the marriage of her daughter. Not because it was a stressful thing, but not because it was a sad thing. But it was happy, 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 happy on top of happy. And, you know, everything was going well, but details had to be made and so on. But at the end, she was exhausted emotionally. And that's what depression is. You can hardly sense to feel. But more often than happiness, it is a sadness. It is a guiltiness. And it's something that you haven't resolved. So it keeps eating at you. I woke up the other day singing, "Be ye doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves." And then I kept singing it in my mind over and over and over again. I was driving myself crazy. That thing wouldn't stop. I had to stop and actually start singing something else. I had to direct my thinking to stop going over this thing. So it's a catchy tune, evidently. I caught it. For half an hour, I couldn't get it out of my head. So if there's this nagging thought that makes you feel strongly, bad, good, guilty, whatever makes you feel, this is a leak in your emotional tank. And as it drains you, you will feel depressed. Had my annual checkup, and just a little creepy because I start saying things like, "So have you felt depressed?" You know what they asked me? They said, "Have you experienced fatigue or muscle ache?" I said, "Do you know who you're talking to?" I do that every day. I feel that every day. What do you mean? I said, "But nothing unusual. Nothing unusual." I understood what they were getting at, I guess. But the thing is that, and I do have fun with them, you know. But they start asking, "Have you been depressed?" and so on. And these are medical people with chemicals at hand. So what are they thinking here? That I'm an animal that needs to be treated. See? I need the chemical infusion. Like plant getting insecticide or fertilizer or something, see? To restrict the way this thing happens because it's just the way, just the mechanical way that we are. Well, resist this, my friend. Because God said he will keep us in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on him. And I think that's where I want to go. If I'm upset, if I'm getting depressed, then I need to recognize that I haven't resolved something. It's just leaking my emotions. So your breakdown may be psychological. Two great expectations on you. However, your breakdown could be physical, just a breakdown. This is where you just can't handle it. The stress actually affects you. They call this psychosomatic disease, but it's a real disease. I mean, you can get a real ulcer in the lining of your stomach because you've been worrying or fretting and all these things, anxious. So it can be physical. Your body only meant for so much stress, or it can be psychological. So, my point in this then is that Christianity offers healing. Not just the doctor, not just the psychiatrist, not just the people who are treating you as Pavlov's dogs. You cannot expect true healing outside Christian teaching and belief. If you do, you'll be disappointed. I've heard of people being treated for depression, and they said, I couldn't exist without it. I couldn't. And I said, well, you know, good for you. I hope it continues to work. And then there's the side effects. Heidi Porter's father, Marshall Neighbors, he got on this. He was depressed. He was a truck driver. He was couldn't control his emotions. So he started taking medicine that they were giving. And he found out that there are consequences from the medicines. And there's a chemical dependency in this stuff, that the addiction and the way this works. There's a lot of things that happen when you are taking a supplement when your body could be producing it on its own. I take medicine because of diabetes. My body doesn't produce the insulin to handle sugar that it should. Now, I only have to take 5 pills a day, but that holds it in. My sugar level was just fine at my annual checkup. The thing is that you have to watch that. So I'm chemically dependent on this because most things that you have, that you eat, regular things, you're not eating dessert. Although from time to time I do eat dessert, but most of the things will have some sort of sugar in it that you just have to watch out for. The body just won't handle it. But the true healing comes with Christ, and this for your mind as well as your body. Christianity answers your needs both theoretically and practically. You can realize, you can recognize the healing as it's happening intellectually, rationally, but also practically, morally, you're being dealt with, and it's a healing thing. So when you accept, you stop rejecting it, you start accepting a real creator-creation relationship. He is God, I am not. He is all-powerful, I am weak, He is strong. You find your true place in the universe. Can be a scary place, yes. But when you know the God of the universe, you say, the person says, I don't know what the future may hold, but I know who holds the future. And so when we're walking His path, it's a better path. When you accept the real Redeemer-redeemed relationship, you find your true moral path in life. Both rationally and morally, you know where you are. If you are excusing wrong morals in your life, there will be consequences. Because this is accepting a drug that will demand more and more. Sins that you take will demand more and more, and you'll be taken into depths that you couldn't even imagine you would go if you continue. But with God, your relationship with Him heals your brokenness. We are truly broken in all these ways we've been mentioning, and we can be fixed. We can be healed, substantially healed, substantially healed. And that's a good thing, a good thing. Comments, questions, bring up something.